This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Now that Human Resources Director Fernando Pino has Kronos for HR, payroll, talent, and time, he's completely crushing it. He even has his own hype song.
Supporting our entire workforce. Everyone has different hours, skill sets, and pay grades. Motivating and engaging our people every step of the way.
Kronos, HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support them. Learn more at kronos.com/HR swagger. I'm on the top, I'm gonna rise up. I'm on the top, top, I'm gonna rise up.
I'm on the top. From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Impeachment recess. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay, who's in for Jennifer Koshenka on this Friday, December 13. Thanks for being with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
After 14 hours of debating language in the articles of impeachment, lawmakers were sent home for the night and will return for a vote today.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has claimed a big victory in the UK's latest election with a mandate for a quick exit from the EU.
The Trump administration has reached a limited trade deal with China. We'll have details in just a moment.
And why teenagers no longer want your cash.
Consumers used cash in only 37% of transactions under $20. And that 46% of people used cash for those kind of smaller transactions a few years ago.
Julie Jargon at the Wall Street Journal on teens and young adults who'd rather you Venmo the money that you owe them for things like babysitting. We'll start overseas. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson skated to an easy victory that allows him to end 3 years of legislative wrangling over Brexit. He expects to take Britain out of the European Union by the end of January. The Brexit divorce represents Britain's biggest political and economic gamble since World War II. After all, the UK is the world's fifth largest economy. With results in from almost 650 parliamentary seats, Mr. Johnson's Conservatives have won 361, their biggest election win since Margaret Thatcher in 1987.
This One Nation Conservative government has been given a powerful new mandate. To get Brexit done.
Mr. Johnson also faces challenges like finding new trade deals and preserving London's position as a top global financial capital. Another hurdle, keeping the UK together. After Scotland voted for a nationalist party that wants an independence referendum, and after Irish nationalists did well in Northern Ireland. President Trump has agreed in principle to a limited trade agreement with China that will roll back existing tariff rates on Chinese goods and cancel new levies set to take effect Sunday. We get more from this morning's Mike Gavin.
Among other things, the agreement is part of a deal to boost Chinese purchases of American farm goods. The Wall Street Journal says the pact calls for China to buy $50 billion worth of agricultural products next year, along with energy and other goods. In exchange, the U.S. would reduce the tariff rate on many Chinese imports, which now ranges from 15% to 25%. Should Beijing fail to make the purchases it's agreed to, original tariff rates would be reimposed. Some tariff rate cuts are expected to be announced today. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. The Phase One trade deal also is expected to include measures to improve intellectual property protection and prevent currency manipulation. Phase Two would, in theory, address things like forced technology transfer and subsidies. More drama from House Democrats, who delayed an impeachment vote by the Judiciary Committee just before midnight. That means the panel will likely vote today on impeachment, a day many lawmakers were expecting to be able to travel to their home districts. The committee had been expected to approve two articles of impeachment late last night, setting up a vote by the full House next week. Instead, as the clock ticked toward midnight, Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler banged the gavel and sent lawmakers home for the night, to return at 10 this morning.
It has been a long 2 days of consideration of these articles, and it is now very late at night. I want the members on both sides of the aisle to think about what has happened over these last 2 days and to search their consciences before we cast our final votes.
Asked why the votes did not occur late last night, Pennsylvania Congresswoman Mary Gay Scanlon suggested it had to do with TV, saying, quote, "The American people deserve to see the vote." It's 10 minutes now after the hour. Thanks for being with us. Vulnerable centrist Democrats are feeling the heat on impeachment, a sign that some lawmakers are beginning to worry about the electoral implications of next week's historic floor vote. There are indications that some members in battleground districts who backed the impeachment inquiry are nervous about voting to impeach President Trump. Few of the centrists are showing their cards a week out from the vote, but reporter Christina Marcos at The Hill says the spotlight is now turning to them as they hear from constituents on both sides. Christina, explain.
There are 31 Democrats who represent districts that President Trump carried in 2016, and there are still others who are considered vulnerable, say they represent districts that Hillary Clinton carried, but, you know, there's still some Republican leanings. So there are a lot of Democrats who, they're the ones who are responsible for handing Speaker Pelosi the gavel for this majority, and they're the ones who are now going to have to walk the plank when the House votes on impeachment articles next week.
All right, so you referenced Elaine Loria from Virginia. Explain her situation.
So she represents a district in Southern Virginia that President Trump carried in 2016. She's one of the seven freshman Democrats who penned that op-ed back in September that basically helped launch the inquiry in the first place. Because once those members, who are all, they all flipped Republican districts last year, we can clear they're on board with an impeachment inquiry for about this Ukraine affair, it was clear that Speaker Pelosi and the leadership could move forward and have the support of moderates here. And she isn't quite ready to say whether she'll actually vote on these articles of impeachment, even though she and the others argued in that op-ed that what had been alleged in this whistleblower complaint was enough to warrant impeachment. And she, nevertheless, along with a lot of the others on that op-ed, were reluctant to speak with reporters as she was walking onto the House floor. There were a bunch of reporters who tried to run after her, but she wasn't interested in chatting with us. But it seems likely that she will ultimately vote for these articles.
You know, what struck me in your story is that it's almost like folks like Ms. Loria don't even want to issue the words impeachment or vote or things like that, because as you said, she sort of pushed back against reporters saying, "I'm already on the record, just Google it, you know, Google it." And she didn't want to reiterate maybe what she had said or if she was changing her mind.
Yeah, well, I mean, Democrats would really like to not deal with this issue as much as they can, so the less they can spend time talking about impeachment, the better they think that is for them. So they would much rather talk about other things. Earlier this week, for instance, when Democrats announced they had a deal with the Trump administration on this North American trade agreement, another one of those Democrats on the op-ed was saying, "Yeah, you know, I'm still reviewing the articles," but she was more than happy to talk about trade. They really would rather, they just want this to be over with.
Yeah. We're speaking with Christina Marcos, congressional correspondent at The Hill, and she's written a piece entitled "Vulnerable Democrats Feeling the Heat Ahead of Impeachment Vote." Who else is feeling the heat? Who else is on that list?
Well, Alyssa Slotkin, she's another one who's a Democrat from Michigan and also in a Trump district who's on that op-ed. There are at least two Democrats that we expect at this point who will likely vote against the articles. Jeff Van Drew of New Jersey, Colin Peterson of Minnesota. And it's unclear if there might be more, but sources that I spoke with yesterday seem to think that they're likely to be the only two, maybe a couple of others. But even though right now a lot of them are being cagey, it's expected that most of them will ultimately fall in line once they have a chance to go back to the districts and actually make these announcements with their constituents versus D.C. reporters in the halls of Congress.
Yeah. Would some of them who are on the fence here prefer, I don't know, like a censure of the president instead of voting for impeachment?
There's some chatter about a handful of these vulnerable members who would rather do a censure vote than impeachment, but we're not getting the sense that it's really a thing up here, and it's clear that the that leadership is going for with these articles of impeachment. So even a bunch of other vulnerable members that we asked about this over the last few days kind of dismissed it as, you know, it's not happening, so it's not worth entertaining.
Thanks, Christina. Christina Marcos, congressional reporter at The Hill. 19 minutes after the hour on This Morning, Rasa Kay is here now with three big things you need to know.
Well, number one, after 3 years of division over Brexit, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson united the Leave vote behind him while the Remain vote was divided between Labour and the anti-Brexit Liberal Democrats.
We must recognise the incredible reality that we now speak as a one-nation Conservative Party, literally for everyone.
Johnson got a mandate to steer the UK out of the European Union next month, and the British pound is soaring. A less-discussed election result, the success of the pro-independence SNP in Scotland, which could have big implications for the future of that union. Number two, President Trump has agreed to a limited trade agreement with Beijing that will roll back existing tariff rates on Chinese goods and cancel new levies set to take effect Sunday as part of a deal to boost Chinese purchases of U.S. farm goods and get other concessions. The U.S.-China trade war has slowed global growth and dampened profits and investment for companies around the world. And number three, after more than 14 hours of brutally partisan debate, House Judiciary Chairman Jerry Nadler gaveled out the marathon hearing shortly before midnight without letting members cast their planned votes on two articles of impeachment against President Trump. House Judiciary Committee ranking member Doug Collins of Georgia was irate.
That was the most Bush League play I have seen in my life, because they want to simply get it back on the cameras because it's after 11 o'clock tonight and they don't think enough people is watching.
The vote for the articles of impeachment is set for 10 a.m. today. Also, the House has passed a bill to lower prices for prescription drugs. The vote reflects unanimous Democratic support, plus votes in favor from Republicans Brian Fitzpatrick of Pennsylvania and Jamie Herrera-Butler of Washington. Lawmakers don't expect the sweeping legislation to pass the Senate, where Republican leader Mitch McConnell has described it as socialist. A GoFundMe account has been set up for the family of Jersey City Detective Joseph Seals, killed in the shootout in that city this week that authorities now are investigating as domestic terrorism fueled by anti-Semitic and anti-law enforcement beliefs. Seals was shot approaching a van possibly linked to a different crime. The suspects holed up at a kosher market where three civilians were killed before the suspects died. Choosing a career, switching careers, a LinkedIn list of emerging jobs shows that demand for artificial intelligence specialists has grown 74% in the past 4 years, the fastest profession of all, with expected earnings potential of $140,000 per year.
Guys, what? Oh, my goodness.
AI, baby.
That was yikes and wowza, I was saying together. Man, $140,000 a year.
Average.
Artificial intelligence. Largely what I had in high school. Artificial intelligence. Before it was a thing, I had fake.
Cutting edge
fake
Gordon
grades,
deals.
Fake everything. Thanks, Rasa. 22 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us. Many young adults and teens now prefer the convenience of a digital wallet to physical cash. People often use mobile payment services like Venmo and Cash App to reimburse friends for office gifts or dinner. That's how my college kid does it. But with young people snubbing cash altogether, parents and grandparents are now being forced to join in if they want to compensate them for, say, chores or babysitting. We're joined now by Julie Jargon, who writes the Family and Tech column for the Wall Street Journal. Julie, set this up.
A lot of young people in particular, teenagers, young adults, they just don't want cash at all. It's just easier for them to have everything on their phone. And so there are young people who are doing chores for their family or they're pet sitting or babysitting, and they don't want to accept cash as payment. They want people to send it to them through an app like Venmo or Cash App.
And what's the reason? There's nothing. They find something inherently wrong with just holding cash?
I guess they feel like, you know, they can lose the cash easily, or it's just inconvenient when they use their phone for everything, making purchases in stores, reimbursing friends. Everything's just right there held on their phone, and they feel like it's easier for them to keep track of it and kind of see where money is coming and going versus having cash, which I guess, you know, burns a hole in their pocket. And once they have it and they spend it, it's gone. So those are some of the different reasons that have been provided to me for not wanting cash.
One of the people you talked to in the story, too, said that there are no security concerns, right? No worries about being hacked or having a money stolen from a Venmo account?
Right. One young man I spoke to said, you know, that is not a concern. His grandmother has a different take and does worry about the safety and security of having money going through an app. But this young man, who's 20 years old, said that, you know, sometimes you have to take on certain risks if you want to kind of take part in the things that are increasingly convenient as a society. And he cited social media as one of those things where, you know, there have been data leaks with regard to social media, but we're all still using social media. And so, you know, he's not going to worry too much about a data breach involving his Cash App or Venmo account.
We're speaking with Julie Jargon. She writes the family and tech column for The Wall Street Journal. Her piece is called Need to Pay the Babysitter? Don't Even Think About Using Cash. What is the stat you cited in the story about how we are moving away from cash?
Yeah, so Square, which is the company that owns one of these apps, it owns Cash App, they conducted a study recently which showed that through March of this year, consumers used cash in only 37% of transactions under $20, and that 46% of people used cash for those kind of smaller transactions a few years ago. So, you know, when it comes to just a few bucks spent here and there, cash is becoming less frequently used.
Thanks, Julie. Julie Jargon. She writes the family and tech column for The Wall Street Journal. Don't forget, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter, at This Morning Show. And you can follow me directly on Twitter as well, at Gordon Deal. 30 minutes after the hour, on This Morning, America's First News.
Goodbye 2019, goodbye Windows 7. Dell's holiday sales are the perfect time to say hello to 2020 and a Windows 10 upgrade. Save big on their latest business computers powered by Intel Core processors. Don't forget to shop servers, storage, and thousands of top brand electronics, all with free shipping. Call a small business technology advisor to help you find the right tech for your business needs at 877-BUY-DELL. That's 877-BUY-DELL or visit dell.com/businessdeals.
In general, I'm a win-win guy. When I have to spend hours searching for the right part, it's lose-lose. It's time lost for me and lost time for my crew. That's why I order from Grainger. With product experts that have the answers to my toughest questions, an easy-to-use website to help me find the right product quickly, I can rely on Grainger to make getting supplies for my business as simple and seamless as possible. When it comes to getting things done, it's a win-win when Grainger's got your back. Call clickgrainger.com or stop by to see for yourself. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
It's the time of year when everyone is traveling or running around getting thoughtful gifts for the people you care about. But what about you? Gordon Deal here to tell you about Audible. Pamper yourself with an Audible membership. Get an unbeatable selection of audiobooks, including bestsellers, motivation, mysteries, and more. Choose three titles every month. That's one audiobook plus two exclusive Audible originals you can't hear anywhere else. And listen on any device, anytime, anywhere with the Audible app. When your holiday flight's delayed, you'll be so glad you signed up for Audible. For a limited time, get 3 months of Audible for just $6.95 a month. That's over 50% off. I just finished listening How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. I'm also a huge John Grisham fan, so one of his audiobooks is next. With Audible, you'll also enjoy easy audiobook exchanges and your own audiobook library that you keep forever, even if you cancel. Visit audible.com/Gordon or text Gordon to 500-500. That's audible.com/Gordon or text Gordon to 500-500.
Catch America's First News online anytime at thismorningwithgordondeal.com.
Thanks for joining us on this Friday, December 13. Gordon Deal with Rasa Kay, who's filling in for Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Articles of impeachment vote delayed till this morning. Limited trade deal said to be reached with China, with stocks higher on the news. Top Republican and Democrat lawmakers reach a tentative budget agreement. Boris Johnson wins big in the UK, receiving a Brexit mandate. Former NBA commissioner David Stern undergoes emergency surgery for a brain hemorrhage. Ravens pound the Jets in Thursday night football. And the Uber driver, whose tip was so big, she finished college. That story in about 20 minutes. Healthcare costs aren't drowning the family budget overnight. Instead, they're creeping upward like a spillover that seems harmless until everything starts to get wet. New government data shows that total healthcare spending in 2018 was up from the year before. Rick Newman, senior columnist at Yahoo Finance, has in-depth analysis of the new stats. Rick, take us through this.
There's some new data out just recently. I've been following this because it's a big deal among Democrats running for president. So new data shows that in 2018, health spending as a whole for the country increased by 4.6%. And the economists who pulled all this data together pointed out that GDP actually rose by more than that. So that sounds like good news. By the way, these numbers are not adjusted for inflation. But incomes actually rose less than healthcare spending overall. Healthcare spending for some time has been rising by more than the overall rate of inflation. So, based on people's incomes, everybody's falling behind based on the rise in healthcare costs. And, you know, everybody knows that. This is something where you hear this economic data and it might sound complicated, but it squares with almost everybody's personal experiences. There was one other bit of data that came out around the same time. This from the Commonwealth Fund shows that health insurance premiums and deductibles combined add up to 11.5% of median income for the average person. I mean, that's more than 10% of income on average. Wow. That's insane.
Yeah.
And, of course, that has gone up a lot over recent years. 10 years prior, it was just 7.8%. So in 10 years, it went from 7.8% of income being spent on basic health care all the way up to 11.5%.
That's 50 percentage points. Or 50% really when comparing increases.
Yeah, I'll trust your math. Yeah, almost, right.
That's insane. So, ironically, as you point out, this has been a top concern for years. Yet, I don't know, nothing ever seems to give on this.
This has been a worsening problem for at least 40 years. And one way to see it is just to look at a chart that shows total healthcare inflation compared with just overall inflation. And healthcare costs have been going up by more than inflation since the 1980s. There have been efforts to do something about this. I mean, the Affordable Care Act, which Congress passed in 2010, obviously an effort to do something, although many people argue that it was misnamed because it didn't really make healthcare more affordable for most Americans. What the ACA, also known, of course, as Obamacare, what that did accomplish, that did allow about 20 million additional Americans to get health insurance coverage. So it became more affordable for that portion of the population, but it didn't do much to help the majority of Americans. And many, many families deal with this every month. It's just increasingly expensive to buy insurance and then use it when you need it.
Yeah. We're speaking with Rick Newman, senior columnist at Yahoo Finance. He's written a piece about rising healthcare costs. You said, too, with a strong economy and low unemployment, many voters say healthcare is their top priority, but they're split on what they want. Explain that.
Well, we're seeing this play out in the Democratic presidential race. Some people want more government involvement. They think that'll solve the problem. But a lot of other people say, no, I don't want this to be something the government takes over. I just want costs to go down. And nobody knows how to make costs go down. I mean, healthcare economists do, but it's very complicated. And there are many factors. And, to go back to the Affordable Care Act in 2010, that law tried to address some of these factors. I think it's most people would agree that we still have a lot of problems that need addressed. And, they range from the amount of health care we use. Some people use way more care than is necessary. End-of-life care is remarkably expensive and a huge driver of cost. We pay more for prescription drugs than people in most other developed countries. We pay more for medical procedures. Part of it has to do with the fragmented healthcare system we have. Part of it is the private sector profit motive. I could go on and on and on. But the bottom line is that everybody knows there's a problem.
Thanks, Rick. Rick Newman, senior columnist at Yahoo Finance. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, you might remember we told you earlier this week just how close the Kansas City Chiefs were to having to forfeit their big game last Sunday against the New England Patriots after a transportation foul-up left a bunch of their equipment in Newark when it was supposed to be in Boston. What we didn't know until now is the wild backup plan hatched by team officials to avoid having having to take the loss. According to the Metro West Daily News, the Chiefs had representatives from helmet company Riddell call over to Musconomet Regional High School in Massachusetts and inform them that the Chiefs needed their football team's helmets for the day. You see, Musconomet's team is the Chieftains, and the helmets are nearly identical to the Chiefs' helmets. So apparently, the Chiefs were ready to have a bunch of high school helmets transported to Gillette Stadium with a police escort. Thankfully, it didn't come to that. The Chiefs' equipment arrived about 90 minutes before kickoff, and despite all the angst, the team won the game.
That's insane.
And I mean,
wow.
I'm guessing my first thought was, remember we had all these issues with Antonio Brown and his helmet earlier in the season. I assume these high school helmets are sort of up to the same standards, I guess, as the NFL helmets. You know, is that something the league even would have allowed? You know, I don't know.
And would they have told the league?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Could you imagine, like, at the end, like, let's say these high school helmets are delivered.
Yeah.
In some way, shape, or form, they managed to fit the Kansas City Chiefs players' heads.
Right, that's the other thing. Right, sure. Much bigger than the high school kids.
And then after the game, the NFL were to come in and say, these helmets don't meet the standard, therefore you are forced to forfeit the game anyway.
Yeah.
Right? You could see the NFL doing that.
This doesn't sound like something the NFL would want to have any part of whatsoever. And yeah, it would be better to probably to ask for forgiveness than to permission on something like this. So you're not going to be calling Roger Goodell asking him if this is a good idea.
Just thinking of the logistics.
Oh, yeah.
Of Riddell having to call Musconomet High School on a Sunday.
Right.
Right? Get the superintendent, alert him. Let the facilities guy has to unlock, are there insurance issues we have to sign off on here to take high school kids' helmets?
I believe there was like a weekend custodian involved in this whole thing who had to go unlock lockers and things like that. Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. And for those of us, Gordon, who are a little older, it can be hard to keep up with these slang words used by younger generations, so it helps every once in a while to have a quick review. So here goes, thanks to the folks at eduberty.com who recently surveyed Generation Z to discover exactly what they are saying and compile the list of the top 25 slang terms. Some of these might be more familiar as they have reached the masses, words and phrases like clapback, goat, and woke. Others that may be less familiar, sos, which is another way to say sorry, sus for someone who is being shady or stupid, and green, which is reserved for something that is boring, uncool, or is just bad in general.
I haven't heard that.
Which would probably be used for just the fact that I'm even doing this in the first place. We could call this report green, to be honest with you.
Could be. I'm not familiar with those. I haven't heard my kids use those words.
Yeah.
I haven't seen them in text messages.
Really? Well, if you don't know, then I'm surely not going to know.
So this is a little suspect, I think.
My kids haven't reached this age yet.
Right. Lit and fire. To describe things that are cool.
Those were also on the list.
Okay. Well, those I can...
Right.
I'm familiar with those. None of this saws or sues or whatever. And green to describe something that's boring?
You got to get in there. Get hip, Gordon.
All right. Thanks, Mike. 13 minutes in front of the hour. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. Many workers feel the prospect of buying presents for their colleagues adds yet another layer of pressure to an already stressful season. A LinkedIn survey found that 31% of employees say they feel they have to add coworkers to their gift-giving lists. A lot of the tension stems from not knowing what to buy. USA Today put together some do's and don'ts. The list says don't buy gifts that can be deemed too intimate, like anything worn close to the body, from clothes to perfume. Don't make everyone chip in for a group gift. People are already financially drained. Let them make their own decisions about contributing to the pot. Do encourage Secret Santa and set a budget. Do split the bounty if a client sends over, say, a giant plate of cookies. Do consider giving to the community. How about donating as an office to a cause? Not a good idea giving your boss a book on how to be a better manager. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour. On this morning, Rasa Kay is back with three big things you need to know.
Number one, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson's ruling party had a sweeping victory in the snap election, paving the way for Britain to leave the EU next month after years of political gridlock.
I want to thank the people of this country for turning out to vote in a December election that we didn't want to call, but which I think has turned out to be a historic election.
Johnson also promised to increase spending on health, education, and police. His main rival, Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn, urged voters to shock the establishment and vote for hope.
Number two, U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer and Chinese Ambassador Kui Tiankai could sign at least the outlines of a limited trade agreement with Beijing today. The package President Trump agreed to yesterday will roll back existing tariff rates on Chinese goods and cancel new levies set to take effect Sunday. Number three, congressional negotiators have reached a deal in principle on a dozen appropriation bills a week before they have to pass legislation to fund the government and avoid a shutdown. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
We'll come down to what are the final points and we'll have a negotiation. We're not going to have a shutdown.
The bipartisan group of four appropriators reached a $1.3 trillion agreement. Also, attorneys for convicted Boston Marathon bomber Dzhokhar Tsarnaev want a new trial. They've asked a federal appeals court to vacate or remand his death sentence, claiming the trial against him was biased. The first U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals will decide whether proper process was followed when deciding to hold the high-profile trial in Boston, where three people were killed and hundreds more injured and maimed. Federal health researchers believe the vaping outbreak has peaked, but it's not over. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say the number of vaping-related lung illness deaths reported rose again this week to 52, up 4 from last week's total. Lamar Jackson tossed a 33-yard touchdown reception to Seth Roberts as the Ravens extended their lead over the Jets 35-7 on Thursday Night Football, The Call on WBAL.
Lamar Jackson on second down, wants to throw, goes to the end zone, looks for Seth Roberts, and delivers a dime! Touchdown, Seth Roberts! A perfect throw from Lamar Jackson, and the Ravens are making it look easy.
Baltimore beat New York 42-21.
Rub it in. Go ahead. Making it look easy. Is that what he said?
Yeah,
making it look easy.
Yeah,
kind of most of the NFL has done with the Jets this year. Thanks, Rasa. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. Coming up next, a heartwarming story of generosity. How about this? For the holiday season, LaTanya Young has serendipitously found a real-life guardian angel. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution says the single mother of three, who dropped out of high school at age 16 when her first son was born, fell behind on payments to Georgia State University and couldn't re-enroll until about $700 in bills were paid. A year ago, she was an Uber driver, picked up a passenger who would change her luck, Kevin Esch. Gave her a $150 tip at the time and told her to pursue her college dreams. The next week, Mr. Esch paid off her $693 balance, which allowed her to re-enroll. Ms. Young, who's 43, said nobody's ever done anything so nice to her in her life. She will graduate with an associate's degree in criminal justice next week, and then she is pursuing a bachelor's degree at the university's Andrew Young School of Policy Studies starting next month. She wants to become a federal probation officer. That'll do it for this hour. For Rasa Kay, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.